If you are listening to like episode 24 or wherever we are at this point, and you have still been here and you're still listening and you're just like, wait, what's going on? Why are these people seemingly going off the rails? You pay less attention to our podcast than Dan seemingly does at this point.
Profits have hit a record high and you've all worked overtime to make it happen. So it's time to be rewarded with a corporate pizza party. The podcast taking you inside the highs and lows of corporate America, hosted by Dan Space, Farah Sharghi, and Mike Petito. We couldn't afford bonuses this year, but sit back and enjoy the next best thing.
Okay, I have hit record because we have to stop talking about our gray sweatpants we're all wearing and do a podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the Corporate Pizza Party. After 2 weeks recording after dark, we are back with the sunshine and in a morning time recording, still eating into the microphone and talking about our gray sweatpants. This is like the third episode in a row where Dan is just shoving food in his mouth like mid-episode.
Yep, you're goddamn right.
All right, here we are. Welcome. We're gonna talk today about some stuff. This is all going in. Dan, I'm gonna let you clear the food out of your mouth first. Farah, good morning. Tell us about yourself.
Good morning, everybody. I have food next to me, but it's not crunchy. It's actually quite soft because I don't want to crunch in the mic. But hi, everyone.
I crunkled the wrapper right into his microphone.
I did none of those things.
You did. It was like I we was, could hear that, it.
Do you know what those were? Those things are soft.
We heard
did
it.
Did you crinkle our wrapper?
No.
Well,
yes. I may have to open it. Yes. Okay. Now in hindsight, okay. Right. Mm-hmm.
Fair. Sorry. Tell us about yourself.
I'm Farah Sharghi. I do not have a bag of chips next to me. I am a technical recruiting leader, now turned career coach, speaker, who lives in San Francisco. Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot to say this morning, guys. It's going to be a busy day. I have a lot of appointments, got a lot of exciting things happening. I am so excited that the warm weather is finally arriving. Like high 60s in San Francisco is like shorts weather. So blessed be the sun.
It's like the Midwest.
Yes. But yeah, I'm excited. Finally, sunshine.
Amazing. Dan, mouth empty. Good morning. Tell us about yourself.
The hell? How dare you judge me so hard? And those are like diet muffins. Like they're soft and disgusting.
I'm not judging you for eating. I'm making fun of you for crinkling that wrapper into the microphone as soon as we started recording.
Whatever. you're right. I'm Daniel. I'm the HR business partner of this little trio. And I hate the fact that it's going to be hot today. So whatever.
Okay.
That's all I got. Mike, tell us about yourself.
No, I shouldn't have to play these games to get a podcast.
You're just going to ghost me anyway.
Yeah. Why are you going to ghost me if I even answer that question? Today, we are going to add a part two to an episode that we recorded, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. And we gave you a bunch of things not to do when we talked about salary negotiation. And we promised you that we would follow up with some actual helpful advice of things to do. And then we never did because we're recruiters and we promised to follow up and we didn't give it. So we are finally here to say, what about the time you didn't follow up on salary negotiation?
Before we move on, because of course I'm going to do this to you, Mike.
Do it.
Because I live to do this. I live to just hijack exactly where you're going, usually at the end of the show, but let me just do it right now. Can we just do a brief shout out to Robert People on LinkedIn, who is becoming our shining knight voice? And oh my God, I absolutely adore every one of his posts. So thank you, Robert People.
Robert People, this is your second shout out on the Corporate Pizza Party podcast. Thank you for what you do. I will tell you, I didn't think you were a real person, Robert. I was convinced that you were Dan or Amy Miller or somebody else on an alternate account where you were just saying all the things they want to say on LinkedIn. But I dug in and you've been on LinkedIn for like 9 years.
Yeah.
And are verified. So you are a real person. Maybe we'll invite you onto the pod someday. I know Farah reached out to him to tell him that we shouted him out. So we have to tell him we did it again.
Wait, we shouted him out? That's the part that confused.
This week's episode.
We did pay attention, Dan.
I'm old. Well, yeah, thanks again, Robert People. And it's probably because I saw his post today. Mike, it would be nice if you could keep control of this group because we're already way off topic.
Hold on, let me try.
Dear listeners, I apologize for you catching all of our like being all silly, but it is a corporate pizza party, and so we're having a good time. Hope you're enjoying listening.
I don't apologize. This is who we are. If you were listening, to like episode 24 or wherever we are at this point, and you have still been here and you're still listening, and you're just like, wait, what's going on? Why are these people seemingly going off the rails? You pay less attention to our podcast than Dan seemingly does at this point.
It's true. Maybe we all just hooked up with the CEO of the cannabis park first. Who knows?
Some of you may have heard Robert People get shouted out for the first time, just like Dan was doing.
All right, Mike, I hate to do this to you. We have got to focus. You have led us on too many tangents already this morning. Recenter yourself. We're here to talk about something. I don't remember what we decided on. But
we're here to talk about salary negotiation. We're following up on what we promised we would follow up on to help you remember what we said 10 minutes ago.
Okay, so let me ask both of you. Do both of you clearly remember what we covered in that last one, or are we just going to guess by it? Because we said follow up, but something tells me just to repeat the exact same things.
No, okay, so we're not. Dan. Because here's what we did in the first episode a few weeks ago, dear listeners. I'm so sorry for this episode. Why don't we have anyone trying to get us onto their big fancy podcast?
I wonder why.
A few weeks ago, we did an episode where we basically gave like our worst salary negotiation stories. We told people what not to do, how to screw up salary negotiation. We talked a lot about the bad advice that's out there that trips people up. But what we didn't do was give anyone like some actionable items to actually do, or some good stories of things people have done well in the salary negotiation world that they can try and kind of do for themselves moving forward. So while we do tend to skew a little bit negative on this podcast, I did think we could use this episode to give some positive advice and action items for people on how to make the most of getting as much salary as possible.
Wonderful. Nice.
Does that work for you?
It does.
Perfect.
I don't know why you didn't cover this in the before plan. Instead, we're talking about makeup and aliens and who knows what else. But yes, good. Let's go.
Whew. Okay.
Farrah.
Farrah.
Yes.
Let's do what we did last time. So last time we had some sort of like, we sort of went this idea of bad salary stories. Mm-hmm. Do you have a story? Because I can think of some people, but you have someone who you can think of who, like, throughout the process just, like, nailed it. Just got themselves the most money possible by knowing how to successfully go through an interview process to get the highest salary, beyond just being qualified and very good, of course.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a handful of candidates whom listened to me, number one. Like, they put trust in me and they realized... Like when people understand that recruiters' metrics are based on how many people they hire and the quality of the candidates, because if you keep pushing candidates through a process that aren't getting hired, that information is looked at. And, you know, it could be that maybe it's the recruiter putting people through that are not great. Could be the hiring manager. Like, we have to define and figure out what's going on. So when candidates are open, like I as a recruiter would offer to candidates, hey, do you want me to prep you for your interviews? Yep, great. I'll tell you a story at Uber, and I'm not gonna reveal names, but I'll reveal enough. So when I worked at Uber, I supported hiring for Uber Jump, which was the bikes and scooters division, and we were hiring a mechanical engineer. And when I prepped him on the phone for his on-site interview, I asked, have you ridden one of our bikes before? He said, no. I said, okay, before the interview, either over the weekend or even like come to early to the office, we always have a bikes outside. You know, I want you to go to the bike and I want you to pay attention to these specific parts on the bike. And I was like, okay, this part here that's above the wheel, there's a module here. Go look at that. And then go look at here. And like based on, and I think he worked at Tesla. So I was like, okay, remember what you learned, what you know at Tesla. Think about the knowledge that you have and you've gained in this area and how you can apply it to what we're doing. Cause here are some potential deficiencies, but also like you need to come up with your own, right? So like really pointed prep. Like this is what I do for my engineers. So then we go to the interview debrief. And so for everyone listening, a debrief is after a candidate is done with their interview process, all of the interviewers get together to discuss interview feedback. The head of reliability engineering was sitting across from me. So reliability engineering it's on software and hardware, but in hardware, basically what these people do is they build tests to determine like a fallacy of hardware. So like if you click a pen a million times, at what point will the pen break, right? So reliability engineers build these tests. So anyway, he's sitting across from me and everyone's giving feedback. And then at one point, he looks at me and he's giving me this look like, Farrah? And of course, I'm like looking around the room like, what? I didn't do anything. What are you talking about? Nope. Because like, I think you could tell like this guy seemed to know quite a bit about certain things. I'm like, oh, really? Huh, you don't say. And so obviously, this guy did really well in his interview feedback. And because he performed very well in his interview feedback, hey, guess what? I can give you a higher, you know, offer in the band. So then, you know, it's like, in order to get a higher offer or to be offered more money, you need to perform well in the interview process. If your recruiter is offering to prep you, take the prep. It's free coaching. Take that, run with it. Then, of course, you know, when it comes to getting offers, the candidates that understand and they know like how the process works are always the easiest ones to work with. And I, as a recruiter, I'll be like, hey, what's your yes number? Just tell me your yes number. These are the bands. And I always tell my candidates, I promise I'll get you that or better. What are you asking for? So you as a candidate, if you tell the recruiter, if you get me this and I will say yes, they'll do their best to go get that for you. If they get it for you, don't try to like renegotiate. And I know that Dan and Mike and I have talked about this. Don't try to keep renegotiating. If you said you want this, take it, you know, run with it. And, you know, maybe ask for a sign on, maybe, or just ask like, hey, is there anything else you could give me? If not, that's okay. Like, I'm super, super happy. But like, are there extra like days of PTO? Because some companies can offer things like additional days of PTO. But if you don't ask, if you don't know to ask, then you don't get. But sorry, I went on a little bit of a tangent there. Trying not to, but.
So tip one was have Farrah prep you really well in advance.
Oops. But no, but in all seriousness, if you are interviewing for any company, if you're an engineer, for example, and you're interviewing at a large company, you're going to have an idea of what the tech stack looks like and how it operates. And so as you're going through the interview process, when you're interviewing with the hiring manager, ask good questions to understand the tech. Because if, like, you have to plan ahead, you have to play chess, not checkers. You can't think one step ahead. You have to think multi steps ahead when you're asking questions of the hiring manager, and ask those genuinely curious questions. Like, what are some of the deficiencies on the team? What are some of the issues you're having? Like, if it's an older tech company, you probably have legacy code and a legacy code base that you're dealing with. And so are they migrating over to a newer, you know, code base? Like, what's going on behind the scenes? When you find out these pieces of information, then you can reverse engineer, like, what kind of answers to give in your on-site interviews. And this applies to almost everybody in every profession. That's why it's important to ask good questions and not asking the hiring manager, what's your PTO policy? F that. If you get the offer, then ask about the PTO policy. But until then, play chess, not checkers.
Yes. Well said. Great.
Okay. Dan, what would you tell someone, right? Here's the thing with salary negotiation. I think maybe this is where we should have even started. Understanding that just like, it's not always just you're going to get the top amount, right? It's sort of this whole way through the process thing. It's not just like you can't just show up there on offer day and think now's the time to kind of play some games. But like, what can people be doing, right? We talk about chess, not checkers, but like specifically, like what can people be doing to like help themselves in these situations?
So for me, I think, and Farrah sort of touched on this, so I'm just going to hold a magnifying glass to it, is that this is a business decision. So the more that you can support this as a business decision, the more you're thinking the way the company is thinking about your salary, which is a business cost. So if you can demonstrate during the interview that why you are this valuable, and you leave no doubt in the interviewer's mind, that gives you a significant advantage regarding your negotiation power. So I guess in terms of what advice would I give everyone, one is I really want to destigmatize this conversation. I really want recruiters to encourage candidates when in that original phone screen to say, this is not a scary thing to talk about. I'm not here to screw you over. I'm here to fight for you. You know, let's talk about this instead of having candidates feel like, oh my God, what if I say the wrong number? Yeah, my advice would be destigmatize the nervousness and the anxiety about talking about this and focus on this as a business decision.
Oh, I want to interject before Mike, sorry. So when I'm recruiting, when I have my initial recruiter phone screen with a candidate, I, in my intro, will say, and we are going to discuss the compensation range for this position. And the reason why is because if this is not within your range, you know, obviously, like, we'll just spend 5 minutes together. Otherwise, you know, now you have like full context around like how compensation works. So I'll go over potential base salary. I'll go over base salary range, potential equity, and like what an offer looks like. So you as a candidate, if a recruiter doesn't do that, then bring it up. You bring it up. Ask. Don't wait for them to ask you what's your desired comp. If they ask you that, just return back and say, yes, I've done some market research, but I would like to know from you, what is the compensation range for this position broken down between base salary, any type of annual bonus, and if there's any other compensation like equity?
Yes. Yeah, I think, and here's what all this boils down to. And this is something I say all the time too, and I think we all do, right? One, like Dan said, destigmatize it. You have to talk about salary. The line I often use here is just like, people who make the most money in their career are comfortable talking about money, which is why last episode, and we're not going to harbor on it now, right? All the advice out there from people who don't do salary negotiation for a living is to say like, oh, we can talk about that later, or I need to learn more. No. Know what you need to make and say what you need to make early. And you may feel that's not right because you read a book by someone somewhere and heard a quote or whatever it might be. But the three of us are here to tell you, as people who have sat in a lot of salary negotiations with a lot of candidates, the people who talk about money make more money in their career. I think that's just easy to know. The other is, salary negotiation starts from the first second you interact with these companies. It starts with the application. It starts with the initial recruiter screen. It starts with the emails you're sending back and forth, just like about setting up interviews. And I don't think people realize that, right? Because it is that whole package. So when we talk about how do you perform at the top or be the best, it's all of these things. All of these things do play into sort of like who you are and if you're in the middle or the top of the range. So if you're waiting for the offer stage, you are not going to make as much money as the people who from the start are like, here's what I'm looking for, here's why I'm great for it, here's where it kind of comes from. And I know that feels counterintuitive for a lot of people, and that's worth keeping in mind. And the other thing I always say is check in about it consistently. People who make money and get high offers, they check in with me through the process. They will tell me, you know, they know they're doing well because they've talked to me, we talked about money. They talk to a hiring manager. Typically, money doesn't come up on those conversations throughout the interview process. And now I'm like, hey, we're setting you up for the final round interview where you'll be doing this. And they'll say to me something like, hey, I just wanted to double check. I know we talked about at the beginning. We're still targeting like $85,000 for this role, right? And they confirm that again. And then we get to the offer stage and I'll usually sort of like soft close them or have that, right? And we know this number we've kind of talked about. Or this is where they start to talk about more money. This is where they may say, hey, after a few conversations, as I've been going through this, it sounds like this is probably closer to that $90,000 to $95,000 number just based on these reasons as we've sort of gone through. And they're saying that again throughout the process with me rather than trying to kind of trick me at the end. Being open about those conversations, I think people are scared to do it, but it's what works.
I think you're right. And I think the other thing is that all of us come from a little bit of a privileged place, right? Because we work on the company side. So we understand there's no anxiety on that side. There's no fear on it. There's a set science. There's a philosophy. There's already process and program in place. But to us, it's like, that's how we live. Like, that's how we pay rent. That's how we're not homeless. And so what I always try to do is to encourage people to understand what it is from the company side, that your salary is not the budget of your role, which is why you never use the term budget, but more so, what is the company thinking about as it relates to negotiation? It's not there to screw you. It's not there to get as little as possible, you know, to pay you as little as possible, because if it wanted to save money, it just wouldn't open the role. The company is not going to, you know, thank God we saved 20,000 when it's closing like 300 million a quarter. Like, that 20,000 doesn't matter. But the company has two objectives. One, what is the business cost and how does it protect internal equity? And two, it is the one that is assuming risk by paying you. So it is very likely that companies will aim a little bit lower because they're the ones who are absorbing risk. They're not sure how you're going to perform. You know, you can blow them away, obviously, but the company has the mindset of, we can bring you in a little bit below and then adjust you along the way. And of course, they do a terrible job of doing that. But a company is not going to willingly overpay you because they don't want to absorb that risk. So understanding their absorption of risk and understanding their philosophy as it relates to making sure all employees are paid equally is one of, I think, the keys to understanding where companies come from.
Dan, I have a question for you specifically.
Yes.
So I would love you to explain it to me and the audience. When we tell candidates who are like, hey, I want to be at the top end of the range, and HR says no. The HR business partner will say, we cannot bring them in at the top of the range because if they were to perform well in that year, we have no room to bump up their base salary. we can't give them any more money. And like, that's the logic that they use. Can you expand on that and explain why that is?
Well, that's really stupid. I don't think I would ever say that.
I've heard that multiple times. Like, I've heard HRBPs who were like, no, we can't bring them in at the top because if we do and then they do well, then, you know, it'll be employee dissatisfaction. And I'm like,
yeah, that's a common thing that you hear people say. And it is stupid, right? Yeah, because
it's so stupid.
Why would an employee say, oh, okay, well, I'll wait for next year to get more money. That sounds good.
So I think one is that HRBPs, our power comes from influence, not from decision making. So like, I've had many, many, many offers brought to me. And what I just weigh in and I say, if we do this, you have 27 people that are going to be displaced. This person has 6 years less experience than everyone else. This creates 27 hassles for me. Is that something that we want to do? I vote no, but I'm only one voice in this. The person in compensation also has to vote because they're the protector of the philosophy. I also want to know what the department head thinks because that's his group. You know, I'm here to ward it. I'm here to say what's best practice and whatnot. But if to me, it's just much more about communication and honesty. So, you know, if the department head and lead say, We have to do this. This is critical to business that we found this person that knows how to implement machine learning to music algorithm, blah, 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 blah. Of course, I'm not mentioning Spotify at all. This has nothing to do with them. This is not a situation that ever existed. But here's this person has this experience and it's extremely valuable. It's how we're going to hit our business goals. I can do a risk assessment and say, okay, they're going to displace 12 people. Is that a risk the business wants to absorb? Frankly, I kind of love when that happens because that means we just get more budget to get more raises because we displace those 12 people, so we get to bring them up. But that just means telling the employee, hey, you know, we want to make you the software. We're bringing you way above the range. This does mean for the first 2 years, you're not going to get a salary increase. We can try to make that up in other levers like stock. But this is what you should know about your offer. And I just think that just that open communication piece is missing.
Yeah, it comes back to something we said in the last one, and we say this a lot, and I know people don't believe it, and I get it, but I think if you listen to us and you're fans of ours, you can probably see that there is some truth to this, like in some way, even though some companies may have people operating with ill intent, right? Everyone's on the same side here. Everyone wants this to work out, and the more honest communication that exists, the easier it becomes for everyone, because it's not a competition. It's not me trying to save the company $3,000 for some fucking reason. Right. It's just like it's me trying to help get this role closed with you and wanting you to be happy. And the more honest people can be, the easier that works. But I do understand why people are scared that's going to cost them money in the end. But I will tell you, the people who are open and do communicate and do all these things we talk about, they make more money. They just tend to. The people who make it difficult and don't want to talk about these things and keep everything close to the vest, there's not a manager out there just like, wow, they did that so well. That came out of like boardroom negotiation 101. Open up that vault for the extra $10,000 we weren't going to give, but give it to them because they refused to say a number first and they refused to tell us any of this stuff. Like, it just doesn't work that way. So I would and I think it's important to understand that like the three of us are not on here telling you this, being compensated by big corporate America to trick you into how to go make less money.
I mean, I feel like
I would take that money from them, but we're not. So.
I like the idea. If that person was so passive aggressive during the interview, they deserve another $5,000.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, like really. I was going to say, if anybody's actually ever listened to our podcast, they'll know that all we do pretty much every single podcast is bash CEOs and like bash the corporate structure. So like, come on, you guys, like really, really, like we're giving you advice that actually works.
Yeah. And there's a key word I haven't said here that I always think is really important when you talk salary. And this is something I tell people who are uncomfortable talking about salary on the first call too. The word flexibility goes really far. Mm-hmm. It is a word to keep in mind. Because if they ask you, right, what are your salary expectations for this role? Assuming this is a role where like a range hasn't been posted or something like that. And you say something like, I'm targeting $90,000 to $100,000 or my expectations are $90,000 to $100,000, but I am flexible based on things because I understand benefit costs and different perks and the scope of the work and things like that. That means a ton, right? Because now you have the ability to ask for more because you made it clear, look, I'm looking for $90,000 to $100,000, but I'm flexible based on these things. And you can say, hey, I looked over your benefit package. And it's going to add $8,000 of cost to me. So I do need to see that being made up in the salary. And it also sort of shows that like, look, $90,000 at one company where benefits are paid 100% and you work remote and you have 5 weeks of PTO is very different than $90,000 at a company where your benefits cost $10,000 a month and you have 2 weeks of PTO and you have to drive to the office twice a week. Like, base salary, I know this is hard to take for a lot of people, is not everything. Because one number can be so different across so many different companies based on stuff that, you know, talking about your flexibility and weighing all of that in makes a huge difference.
I remember when I got an offer from a company and I asked for the benefits. I was like, show me exactly how much I'd be paying for medical. And I saw, and I was like, what the actual F is this? First of all, your total rewards person needs to be fired if this is how much employees are paying for their health insurance. This is actually a joke. And I told them, I said, I mean, I as an individual was paying over $350 a month just to get health insurance coverage. I might as well just pay it out of pocket. This is stupid. I'm like, how much are you subsidizing? You're getting screwed. And they came back and said, okay, we'll give you a sign-on bonus to cover the medical expenses. So there are ways if you rationalize, like Mike said, and say, hey, you said this, you know, like this is the offer, but here's what I'm giving up, you know, then, you know, that you'll have a stronger case.
I have also rejected an offer over benefit costs in my career. And I tell people this all the time. Like, when you get an offer, the first thing you need to do is ask for it in writing and ask to see the benefit cost. I received an offer that was at the exact money we had talked about through the whole process, but they never showed me the benefits, and the benefit costs were astronomical. This company, it didn't even only have a family plan. Each dependent raised the prices. So like most benefits, you just like have a family, and no matter how many kids you have on it, this you paid extra for each person on it. So the price was just out of control. And I didn't even negotiate. I just said, hey, I looked at these benefit costs. I can't afford this. This job is a net loss for me if I take it. And they came back with this huge salary increase that obviously they had ready to go because they knew that. And I was still like, no. Because not only is that just like the premiums, like your copays are ridiculous, your deductibles are ridiculous. Like, this job will be a net loss for me to take. And I don't think people think about that when they talk about just negotiation overall. Like, they're only caught up in the base salary number. So that is why it's important to not just lock into like, here is one number, or to say what's your budget for the role, because like, just the budget doesn't matter if benefits suck or if these other things suck. Like, you need to look at everything.
My rule of thumb is always, I have two general philosophies. One, it's very difficult to have a negotiation go south with questions. So I think just tying into your word flexibility is great. Questions are always great. Relating it to business costs, and I forgot what the other piece of advice was. Oh, don't go to the well more than twice. That is my big thing. I have seen many, many great offers. I've seen many great candidates get pulled. One time negotiate, generally fine. Second, you're normally pushing things, but if you can do it the right way, fine, especially if you're just looking to close one thing. You try to go back a third time, you're gone.
We have to wrap. Farah is frantically telling us about her hard stop. Farah is going to drop off, and Dan's going to tell me his sentences. Farah, say goodbye to everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye, love. Thank you. Bye, guys.
Farah is going to have to come back on to upload that file later.
Yes, she will.
Dan, but this is a great note for us that we knew about a hard stop and just went far too long anyway.
I just saw that.
As we always do. Dan, besides the fact that we're now wrapping up this episode by ourselves because we talked so long and bullshitted so much that Farah had to leave, any hesitations about this episode?
I'm just seeing her chat now. She's like, guys, please, we need to wrap.
please. Farah was texting us. She was typing in here. The look in her eyes were begging us. And Dan was like, I have a long story to tell.
I have 19 more stories I have to share. No, I have no reservations aside from apparently crunching wrappers on my very disappointing vegan beet muffins this morning.
Oh, yeah. The wrapper crunching, the coughing. I'm sorry to your ears on here. We have put some work ahead of us for this episode. And honestly, we may just leave it all in because who cares?
And what about you? What are your reservations?
My reservations about this episode are that I feel like I'm a little bit mean to you, Dan, and I'm sorry. Well, when I was I was yelling at you a lot for the coughing and the rapping, and I hope our listeners know that it's all in good fun.
I think my feedback for you, though, is that you just take us on way too many tangents. You are just so empty-headed. You have no idea what you're talking about from stage to stage, and you really just need to get it together.
I no longer want to be the Tina Fey of this 30 Rock group. I just want to be I don't want to be Liz Lemon anymore. I think we can just all be Tracy Jordan and just see what the fuck happens.
I'm going to be Jenna Malone.
Yeah, you can be Jenna Maroney. Farah is also Jenna Maroney. I will also be Jenna Maroney. And we'll just see how this podcast goes from now on.
No, I don't ever take anything you say seriously. I mean, like, okay, mean-spirited. Yeah, no.
Yeah, nothing I say is ever taken seriously. And that's why this thing gets off the rails. All right, that's all. Farrah's gone. Like, if you think we're kidding, Farrah's gone, and her files are not uploaded, so we'll see what happens in this episode. So we'll just say goodbye to everybody.
Bye, everyone.